Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film that features actors, directors, and writers of color. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Tumblr, Twitter, and Facebook at sfincolor.
And today we are talking about Star Trek Beyond, which was just released last week.
Yay!
This is one of the few times we're actually going to release an episode like the same day, weekend, whatever, that we recorded it.
It's very exciting. So, it's like we're speaking to you in the present. It's like a gift. That's why it's called the present.
Okay, Melissa. So this movie is pretty awesome because it was directed, co-written, and has like two POC actors. So
that's more than two POC actors.
Oh, that's true. We have four if we're counting. I was just thinking about like the new people, one of our new protagonists, Jayla, and one of our new villains, Idris Elba. But yeah, actually, it'd be like four. So, quite the sci-fi in color. I guess trifecta is the word you used before when we were trying to record the beginning of this and screwed it up. But that was mainly my fault.
It always is. No, I'm kidding. It's almost always mine. Anyway, yeah, this is really exciting. It's a lot of stuff to do and discuss and be representation.
Yay, Star Trek. So the director is, let me pull up Internet Movie Database, which I actually have up this time. okay, who do we have in this movie? We have, the director is... now I'm mixing up his name with the director is Justin Lin. It was co-written by Simon Pegg, who plays Scotty, and Doug Jung, who cameos as Sulu's husband. And some of our actors, our leads, that are POC include Zoe Saldana, John Cho, we have Idris Elba as the main villain, and Sophia Boutella. Butella, something like that, who plays Jayla, who is the white-faced alien with the black markings and like the ponytail. Apparently her name is supposed to be a take on Jennifer Lawrence. Like they were referring to her as Jayla, and then it just kind of morphed into Jayla.
I don't know how I feel about that, actually.
Honestly, and I'm quoting someone else here, she's more of a Rey than a Jennifer Lawrence, but
yeah,
you know.
No, I agree. She's competent and badass, but not with a lot of all of her humor comes indirectly.
Yeah, that's true.
We laugh at her, not with her.
Oh, I wasn't laughing at her the entire time.
Exactly. It's just when you're laughing in conjunction with something that she has done, it's because it's we don't understand her because she's a foreign influence. Yeah, her humor comes from that she doesn't understand Earth customs or
that's like Federation fish out of that's like the classic fish out of water.
No,
thing,
yeah,
though, you know,
but that doesn't feel like very Jennifer Lawrence to me.
Yeah. Definitely.
So I'm confused. Are we talking about like Interview Jennifer Lawrence or like Hunger Games Jennifer Lawrence?
I am not sure.
Because
I mean,
like
that's,
she's hilarious that's in interviews, but she's like the most awkward pony there is. I don't know why I said pony.
Pony? Well, I mean, I just remember reading some articles and it was Simon Pegg who kept referring or kept saying that he and Doug Jung were referring to her as J-Law. For the first bit, before they figured out what her name was. And they just kind of went with that because you're like, hey, sounds close enough.
It works, it works.
So, fun fact, this is more for you than anyone else. Okay. But Justin Lin, he is the one who directed the Modern Warfare episode of Community.
That is very cool. That's like one of the best episodes of television ever.
I don't know if it won like Emmys, but I feel like it did, right? It must have won something.
Let me tell you something.
But I don't know.
I don't want to go off about this, but I watch pretty much every award show on TV except for the Emmys, because they just is so incongruent with the way that I watch TV. It just, they'd never award things to the shows that I think deserve it. And so I just never, and there's such a boring show too. Like, at least like the Tonys and the Grammys and even the Oscars will do performances. What are the Emmys going to do? They just stand there like, look at screens. Okay, I'm done. But I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever sat down to watch the Emmys. I mean,
I tried.
They definitely are doing a better job with the, if we're going to talk about POC, they're definitely doing a better job there. But other than, like, in TV in general, but other than that, yeah, I feel like it's not as much as an event as, like, the Oscars or Tonys or whatever.
I do love, you know, my Tonys. But yeah, I mean, they've had good hosts in the past. So sometimes I sit down, I'm like, oh, I'm going to totally watch this year. And I just fall asleep.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously not what we're talking about. So we can, let's get back to Star Trek.
But that's just, okay.
That's an important side note.
Yeah. Anyway, so Justin Lin, for the rest of you who are maybe more interested in like who this person actually is, he also directed a bunch of the Fast and Furious movies, which is why he was chosen to direct this franchise, at least this third installment. And he's also done, like, he started off doing like indie flicks. I know he did Better Luck Tomorrow, which is like a pretty groundbreaking, but it was a pretty it was a different kind of indie flick, because it was a huge Asian American cast, and it was basically it did not portray Asians in a good light, so people were kind of like up in arms about this kind of thing or whatever. But anyway, that's like a whole nother thing. But overall, Better Luck Tomorrow was considered a great film. I think Roger Ebert, there was some kind of story about Roger Ebert like standing up and like defending the film because people at like Sundance were getting mad or something. It was like a whole thing. So apparently once that happened, Justin Lin had a lot of attention directed on him. Once Ebert kind of stood up for him. And yeah, he's done The Fast and Furious. I'm not sure what other films he's done, but as you could see, if you ever decide to watch the Modern Warfare episode of Community, it is so excellent. Like, just like stylistically, like the cinematography and just everything, it's like, it is one of the top episodes of Community.
And there are a lot, but
it's one of the top episodes of Community for a good reason. Like, that's the one that, like, if you want to get someone into that show, you kind of watch that one first. At least that's how I was introduced to it, so.
That's fair.
But I also, I don't know. I feel like, you know, the pilot is just kind of like, it's all right. But, like, Modern Warfare is so much fun, so much fun, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, to connect that, some of the POC actors in this movie, it has been noted, are covered with a ton and ton of prosthetics, which people are like, not again, not another POC covered in prosthetics. But, like, one, for me, I'm kind of like, well, we kind of see Idris as a human. Spoiler alert. But we kind of see Krall as a human later on, and he's obviously black. So, like, whatever.
What?
Right? Like, oh my god. And then also, just sorry, I was thinking about Modern Warfare, and this was supposed to be my segue, but I kind of forgot. Danny Pudi, who I think Community is the thing he's most famous for. I don't know if he's really famous for anything else. But, you know, since he's worked with Justin Lin on Community, he had a little bit of a not cameo as one of the aliens in this film. It's when we first meet Jayla. It's like Scotty's being harassed by like two or three aliens who are also on the same planet, right? And they're like trying to attack him when Jayla comes to Scotty's rescue. And so Danny Pudi is actually playing the alien with like the spikes coming out of his face, like the skinnier one. And I had no idea he was in the film.
Neither
until
did I.
I saw the credits and it said Danny Pudi, and I was like, wait, what, where, when,
who,
what? And then I went online after finishing the movie, I went back home, looked it up online, and I was like, oh my gosh, I totally did not recognize him at all. But I guess that's how alien movie prosthetics work. You probably shouldn't recognize the person if they do a good job. So yeah, we have a lot of POC in this. I mean, just even the background characters and like little cameos, like I don't know about you, Melissa, but when we, I know I'm like skipping all over the place.
That's
but
okay.
When we first arrive,
I'm here for you.
On...
This is your moment. This is, you're a Star Trek fan. That's, this is, I was Star Wars. This is your moment to shine.
Also, none of us have notes, so we're just kind of rambling, honestly. But that's okay. but yeah, we have a lot of like fun little cameos.
So many.
When we first arrive in Yorktown, I believe we see not in the very beginning of the montage for Yorktown, but like towards the middle when the bullet trains or whatever they are like twist past this like little kid, and the little kid is this like Asian kid who's like has green skin and weird ears that you don't see unless you look at like promo stuff. I was like, that's probably someone's kid, like someone on the crew or someone on the, like, that's probably someone's kid. And of course, naturally, that kid is the director's kid. So I was like, good job. Good job sneaking your kid into the movie. Because I was like, wow, like the Asian ratio is really high in this film. But that's okay. I'm totally cool
with
that.
You're here for that. One of my favorite appearances was Greg Grunberg.
Yes, I was going to talk about him.
He's
always there.
He's known for making like these random little appearances. I mean, he was in Star Wars, and
he was in the Star Trek 2009 film too.
Oh yeah,
but that was a voice cameo. Yeah, he didn't. I think they shot some stuff with him, but they just ended up not using it.
Yeah,
but
he made it into
he
this
played.
One.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because J.J. Abrams produced this film.
Right, and, like, they're buddy buddies.
And whenever J.J. works on anything, apparently Greg Grunberg needs to be in it.
Yep.
So.
That's a law. It's, like, in his contract.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't mention, like, Slesho, but I guess... Oh, God, I mean... Okay, so I'm going to draw a lot of parallels or make a lot of connections to the 2009 film because...
reasons.
It's... Well... In a lot of ways, it does a lot of throwbacks and callbacks to, not throwbacks, it does a lot of callbacks to the 2009 film.
Throwback Thursday.
And where was I going with this? I was going somewhere with this. Anyway, so yeah, there's going to be spoilers for the 2009 film. But yeah, Greg Grunberg, he plays Kirk's stepfather in the 2009 film. He's yelling at him over the car radio. No, not a car radio. Whatever his cell phone thing is. Do you remember that? Okay, so yeah, this is getting a little bit 2009-ish. But Melissa, you've watched that film. Do you remember when young Kirk is speeding down the road in the car and then the Nokia ringtone just goes off?
I mean, yes, but no. You feel?
Okay, well, I just described it for you. But yeah, the Nokia, like his Nokia, his like completely anachronistic Nokia ringtone goes off. He answers the, I think it was a car phone, yeah, he answers the car phone and it's just Greg Grunberg like screaming at him to like get back home because he's gonna ground him and whatever. So yeah, he's been in a bunch of stuff. I mean, he was in the latest Star Wars. He's probably gonna pop up again in Star Wars. He's just making the rounds in the sci-fi community, I guess.
I mean, that's how it is. I think it's a small little world. I mean, it's a big universe, but apparently he's everywhere.
But yeah, I mean, I am super excited to be talking about Star Trek just because I got into it when I first watched the 2009 film. I mean, it's just really nice because it was one of the first, I mean, if anything is more emblematic of sci-fi and color, I mean, it's Star Trek because, like, it came out in the 60s, the late 60s, and it was just so, it brought so much multiculturalism and acceptance and, like, just optimism to sci-fi. I mean, just because, like, it is just so diverse. You see, I mean, it's, like, it's 2016, so it's, like, okay, by now, hopefully, you're seeing, like, not just white people in everything. Hopefully, you're seeing, like, a good, like, diverse crowd in your sci-fi movies, which isn't always the case.
Not just, like, a Donald Trump rally crowd.
Yeah, basically. And
I maybe should have said that.
But even when you, I don't think anyone who liked Donald Trump was listening to our podcast, Melissa. I just don't think so.
There's no overlap in communities.
But, yeah, I mean, after I watched the 2009 film, I think it came out in May or something. I must have watched it a couple weeks after it was released. And, I mean, it was finals week, but I didn't care. I was watching Star Trek all day, every day, man. I was watching, like, the old, the original, well, I guess it's called TOS, the original series. Because I think CBS had it on their website for a while. They had a bunch of episodes on. And I was just struck by how, even though this show was an old show, it was just filled with, like, even though I guess you could say the three main cast members, Kirk, Bones, and Spock, are obviously they're white males. But I mean, it was just nice to have some representation on the bridge. We have Sulu and Uhura. Even though they didn't get too much to do, they were still, like, you know, a part of the team. And then you see so many of the background characters. We had, like, people who were Asian or Black or Latino or whatever. And it was just really nice to see that, because I feel like you don't see that really. You hardly see it now. And you never saw it back then. And it was like, you know, Star Trek is famous for having, like, the first interracial kiss on TV. And, yeah, it's just, Star Trek just makes me so happy. It just makes me so happy. And diversity is just one of the reasons. I know, like, there's, like, a whole catchphrase, Vulcan, I don't know if it, motto, it's like infinite diversity in infinite combinations or something, infinite combinations or something, which I don't know, I feel like that really sums up Star Trek in a nice way, you know.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what this film was all about. It was talking about, I mean, this film is pretty it's pretty anti-Trump, honestly, because this film was basically talking about how, you know, we're stronger when we're a united group and a more diverse group than when we're just, you know, one group of, like, the same people who have, I mean, I feel like it's not, I'm not quite doing justice to what the message was, but, you know, like, Kral's whole thing was, he used to be a human soldier, and he fought against, I think, the Zindi and the Romulans, and he's like, he's basically saying, like, I don't understand why we are, like, intermingling with them when they are our enemy. And then Kirk's like, you know, we have to evolve and change, and, like, we're stronger, even though we're all, like, different and multicultural and whatever, we're stronger together than, you know, fighting each other, which is a very Star Trekian concept. And it's just kind of nice to get that in 2016, when so often it feels like people are screaming the exact opposite thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going to stop talking for a little bit because I need to drink some water and not pass out from the heat. And Melissa can give her, can say her thoughts.
I mean, in terms of Kral and his place in the film, I definitely think that he could have been a much better villain than he was. I feel like if they had really developed him, like, a lot of the things, exactly what you're saying, that's where he could have gone. I mean, maybe he almost got there, but we just don't know the depths of what's going on in his mind, what, you know, the complexities of what drove him to do the things that he's done, really his world and his life. And I would have really appreciated a much more explicit, you know, details about him, really. He could have been, but he was not. And he was fine. I mean, he wasn't really the focus of the film, and I can respect that. That's fine. I'm not, whatever. It's fine.
No, I totally agree. I definitely, you're not the only one who picked up on that. I think one of the, like, I guess, flaws of this trilogy so far is they're just not very good at setting up strong villains. Like, I don't know what it is, but, and here's the thing, and here's my caveat, right? Simon Pegg and Doug Jung, they wrote the script in 6 months. That's, like, unheard of, dude. Like,
I was reading about that. They only had 6 months to write the
dang thing, and it was like, for 6 months, this is pretty good.
I mean, I think it's, but really, I understand. Good.
Like, I kind of wish they had more than 6 months to work on the script. But you know,
at the same time, it's like, a lot of times some of the best work comes under constraints. I feel like
that's
really,
certainly the case here.
Yeah, really promotes like panic, and but like in a good way. It, like, it puts the pressure on. It's like when you procrastinate an essay the night before. Like, all of a sudden, somehow it gets done. It's like magic. But no, I think it's a really strong script, especially in terms of the relationship between the crew, and the way that developed, and you know, things were really. A lot of the overall themes of the movie were introduced early and consistently gone back to.
Yeah.
Like, Kirk and Spock thinking about leaving and the way it kept being touched upon. That sounded kind of weird. But
No, I understand what you mean.
So,
yeah.
It was, a lot of the script was really good. I just, the villain was definitely a weak point, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's hard to fault them too much on that, considering we have a large cast and we really want like a badass moment from every single one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You really want every person to have their moment, you know, their time to shine. And
yeah, everyone got like a bit of a moment.
Yeah, I think that's really important with, you know, a large cast. But the problem is that, you know, the more time you're devoting to your main cast, the less time you have to new characters, to villains, to, you know, expanding any part of the universe, which I liked the time that they took to kind of go through Yorktown and whatever. Like, I thought that was, like, one of the coolest parts of the whole film.
No, I thought the Yorktown sequence, even though it was kind of long, like, I thought it was I thought it was good.
I loved it. That was one of my favorite parts, honestly. And it's not just because it's called Yorktown, I swear. but it was just, it was creative. Like,
yeah.
I don't know when I got to this point where I've just become very blasé with a lot of science fiction and a lot of the tropes. Nothing, even though the whole thing is like, it's in the stars and it should excite you. It is somehow, when you go back to the same kind of plots and the same kind of tropes and the same kind of stories, you don't get that moment of excitement, of thrill. You just... yep, this is the story, and here it goes, and whatever. But that was a moment where I was like, oh, wow, that's so cool. Upside down and interlocking, and look at the visuals. You couldn't have gotten that 10 years ago. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Yorktown was pretty spectacular. I mean, I think the thing with this, with Beyond is, you know.
Every time someone says Beyond, I want to say Beyonce. Just let that be noted for the record.
Continue. That's funny. Rihanna did like the endings or the credits song, but anyway, the thing with Beyonce, a lot of people, and I am inclined to agree with this, they say it's the most Star Trek of the three films so far, and I have to totally agree. Some people have said it's the best film. I don't know how I feel about it being the best film. I mean, I definitely know how I feel about Into Darkness. Into Darkness is the worst of the three, but I don't know if I could, like, rank between Beyond or 2009. Like, I don't know which one I would say is better. I guess this film is better from, like, I guess a writing and character standpoint. I guess it's just, it is more Trek, you know? But, like, I felt, honestly, that, like, the 2009 film was, like, funnier. It was just more entertaining, and I laughed more. Beyond was more... but that's the thing. Beyond is more Star Trek. Beyond is more, like, kind of... well, it's definitely more thoughtful than the other two films. And it just was more... it was more Trek. And, you know, there was a distinct lack of lens flare. But I think that kind of worked.
I'm pro-anti-lens flare, if that makes sense.
I mean, as much as I love the... it's like, ironically love the lens flares in 2009. I kind of ironically love them, but also kind of really do like them. But it was a bit much. I think someone counted actually how many lens flares there were in the first one, and it was like 400 something lens flares they counted, like 400 or 500. So yeah, it's funny because I think someone online was saying that like the whole twisting camera is the new lens flare in this film.
I like
it. Kind of true. It was cool. I mean, it definitely gets annoying when it's overdone, but it wasn't super overdone. There were some, like, weird Dutch angles, twisting cameras in, like, the 2009 film that I can remember. Like, when Spock's talking to the High Vulcan Council in the first film, it like the camera does a weird twisty thing.
I remember
which is kind of cool. But, I've seen the 2009 film so many times.
It's really hard to compare.
You can ask me pretty much anything about it.
It's really hard to compare a movie that you've seen, you know, dozens of times and really love and it means something special to you. It's really hard to compare that with a movie that just came out. For me,
that's true. It usually takes,
you know, months, if not a full year, before I kind of realize how everything falls together. That's kind of how the... you know, the newest Star Wars movie was. I got out of there. I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And then, you know, as the weeks kind of went on, I was like, you know, I don't know if it's, like, as good as I had thought initially. And it just, it needs time to figure out how all that stuff goes. I should just say, for the record, which I don't know if you know this, Maggie, I never saw the second movie.
Yeah, and a lot of people have told me that, and I'm like, that's good. You should never see the second movie.
I mean, on Netflix for a little while, and I was like, I'm definitely going to watch it. But I just know, I've heard so many people say that they disliked it. And I was just like, why would I subject myself to that? Let me just let the 2009 just stay as a good movie in my head.
Exactly. There's a reason why there's like only like one reference to the second film in Beyond. There's a reason for that. It's because people hated the second film.
What was the reference? I was wondering if I'd have difficulty.
Oh, it was super oblique too. I didn't even realize it was a reference until I read about it later. But basically, when Scotty ejects himself using one of the pods to land on the planet, it's not the same pods that everyone else is ejecting themselves from. He actually stole Khan's trick from the previous movie because Khan escaped the ship in that way.
Okay.
He used the pods in the engineering section. So, yeah, that was the only reference to Into Darkness. There was no other references. Alice Eve's character, Carol Marcus, doesn't show up at all. We don't ever talk about Into Darkness, and that's kind of the way it should be.
Okay.
I think the curse has been reversed, honestly, because it used to be, what was it? It was like the odd-numbered movies were terrible, and now... I think the even movies are going to be terrible. So I'm not holding my breath for the next one. I mean, if it's great, it's great. But, you know, I think the curse has been reversed. So, yeah. I just don't know about that, man. I mean, the thing with Into Darkness, right? I think it was for a blockbuster, it was a decent movie. But for a Star Trek movie, it was not. My personal gripe with it, one, it's very unmemorable. I don't remember anything about that movie. To be fair, I've only saw it once, but I really don't remember anything.
And you never felt like seeing it again.
Never felt like seeing it again, and it was I was thoroughly disappointed when I walked out of the theater, which was very different from Beyond. I was very happy after I saw Beyond, but
Beyonce.
It wasn't a horrible movie. It was just horrible compared to like the other Star Trek movies, especially since 2009 just came out and it was a decent movie. My main thing with Into Darkness was here's the thing, right? Obviously with an ensemble cast, you're going to be skipping around to different people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Beyond did that. We had people in groups of two or three basically.
That was
it
was so set up that way, like on purpose. And like, I didn't even care. Like, it was just like, let me pair you off in the groups that I want to see you and finally come together at some point. But it just gives you time to enjoy each of them. Because, like, I do some writing sometimes, whatever.
You're a writer.
Yeah, okay.
You are.
Writing the scenes with tons of characters in them is, like, the worst. It's, like, literally the worst.
Yeah.
Balancing
it is the
everyone's
worst, 'cause, like,
voices.
How can you get people to interact on a meaningful level when they're just in big groups?
I mean, you see that, like, IRL, too. Like, think about when you get together with, like, five or six of your friends, you know, if you have that many friends. You know, if you're a sci-fi fan, you might not. But it's really difficult. And so I really liked that they paired them off and they, you know, it was obviously done strategically, but it was really good.
But the thing that's great is we got pairings that we haven't seen before, or we don't get a lot of in the previous two films.
No, it was really,
like,
good.
Spock and Bones is a classic pairing, but I mean, how often do you get to see Uhura and Sulu together? Like, that just doesn't happen. And then we had Kirk and Chekhov, which is, like, kind of random.
Yeah.
It was nice to get new pairs and seeing them, absolutely, like, work together. It's kind of like how, to go back to Community, it's kind of like Community when you get, like, you have your, like, obvious pairings, right? Like, Troy and Abed, for instance. But then when you have, like, different kinds of people paired up, like, say, Shirley and Jeff, like, that's a whole nother dynamic. And it's just really interesting to explore, like a group dynamic within, like, smaller, I guess.
No, yeah, absolutely. That's one of my favorite things to do when I'm writing.
It's fun. Yeah, and it's fun to watch when it's done well, which it was done well. It was not done well in Into Darkness. The thing, I felt beyond... overall, I thought the editing was pretty seamless, and the transitions between different groups of people was fairly seamless for me.
No Star Wars transitions.
I don't even mean it like that. I don't even mean like it's like visually, this is chapter one, this is chapter two. I don't even mean it like that. I mean it more like it wasn't jarring when we switched back and forth.
Or visually?
Both.
Okay, yeah.
Like, that's... Here's the thing. That was my main gripe with Into Darkness. It's whenever we switched to a new group of people, it was just very jarring and very confusing. That's what I disliked the most about Into Darkness, because I was just like... We just kept going, zigzagging all over the place, and I was like, I don't... What? Stop doing this. No, because, I mean... And then they do it, I mean... Because the Star Trek films are... by nature an ensemble cast kind of a thing, like they have to constantly kind of juggling. But I just remember watching Into Darkness was just so painful, because it was just, I don't know what was it, what I would have to watch it again, but I don't really want to watch
don't
it again.
Do it.
But there was something about the transitions that just wasn't working, but whereas it worked in the 2009 film and it worked in Beyond.
Yeah,
but it was just transitioning between different groups of people in Into Darkness was just really bad. Like, we would just cut to, like, Bones doing something somewhere else, and I'm like, this, what? This is, like, no relation. It was just a mess, you know?
Yeah.
But again, like, I'm, like, being overly harsh on it, because I kind of had high expectations, and also because, you know, it wasn't bad for a regular film, it was just bad for Star Trek films, what I expected, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the big turnoffs for me, besides everyone saying it sucked, was Khan.
Oh yeah, that was a whole nother mess.
I mean, we don't need to get into
Like, we can get into
Let's get into
A little. I mean, this is the nature of our podcast. Yeah. We're talking about POC and sci-fi. I mean, okay, let's be honest, right? The original Khan was not Indian, or Desi or anything. The original Khan was, I think, Ricardo Montalban or something, and he is Latino. Like, they had a Latino guy playing an Indian guy, but it was the late 60s. I mean, like, it was the late 60s. I have nothing else. That's my defense.
I forgive a lot of movies back then for things that I wouldn't necessarily let fly now.
Oh,
so many things.
So many things. And West Star Trek, story. The original what? Series, is definitely not immune to that. I mean, there's some weird, wacky 60s, sexist, classist, somewhat racist stuff in there, even though it was Trek. So, like, yeah, let's not pretend that, you know, old Star Trek was, like, is super perfect or whatever. It had its flaws. But, I mean, at least it was a brown guy, you know what I mean? Like, come on. And then we had the whole thing with Benedict Cumberbatch playing, like, a whitewashed role of Khan, and that was a whole mess.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think... I like Benedict Cumberbatch's work overall. I think he's a good actor. What I remember from Into Darkness is he did a good job, but, like, it's just kind of like, why did it have to be Khan? Like, why did they have to call him Khan? Like, they could have called him by any other name.
George. They could have called him George.
And they had to make this a whole big thing with, like, secrecy and covering it up, and everyone knew it was Khan. So it was kind of like,
that was
really, it was a weird PR move, man.
That was one of the things that really turned me off. I mean, all the things that you mentioned, definitely. And at that time, I was really experiencing Benedict Cumberbatch, like,
fervor.
No, like, I was done with him. Like, there was too much. It was too much.
It was too much.
But it was really frustrating to me that, you know, for months they were like, He's not Khan. He's not Khan. He's not Khan. And then
we
he's like,
"We all know it's Khan.
He's actually Khan." And I was so like, I felt
like
abused
no,
by their. That's not the right word. I felt
like
betrayed by their, you know, their publicity.
It was too much. I mean, like, I understand people don't want to spoil things and whatever, but like, it was just too much. Although, to be fair, I started watching Sherlock because Benedict was going to be into darkness, and I was like, let me see what this guy is made of. So I went to see Sherlock, and I was like, huh, this is pretty good. And then, as with all Stephen Moffat creations, the later season just got worse. But anyway.
Unless he starts off in the later seasons, in which it starts off worse.
No.
That was a burn.
Well, I thought season 5 of Doctor Who was all right, but anyway.
Well, let's agree to disagree.
Let's go. Oh, okay. I mean, it was my first season, so that's why I liked it, but I agree. Overall, it's pretty mediocre of a season. Moving back to Star Trek. So, okay. I complained about Into Darkness. If you want to see it, go ahead and knock yourself out, but
we're not going to stop you.
It's going to be a waste of like 2 hours of your life, so and you'll never get back. So I just recommend watching 2009. The 2009 film or watching Beyond.
I hope that if you're listening, you've seen, actually.
Yeah, I think you don't have to see the 2009 film to
it helps
like
a lot.
Or understand Beyond, but it does help a lot because there are numerous, numerous, numerous callbacks. So, Beyond. I'm thinking, anything else we need to talk about? Doug Jung, I'm not sure what he's done in the past. I know we talked about Justin Lin a little bit. Simon, I think this was Simon Pegg's first feature that he wrote. I could be wrong. But honestly, if it... that does sound kind of weird, though. If this is the first feature he wrote, I don't know. Anyway, I'm not sure. I have to go double check myself. If it was his first feature and he had to write in 6 months, like, bravo, man. You freaking did it. but even if it's not his first feature, I still think being able to, you know, churn out this good of a script in such a limited amount of time is pretty excellent. Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I missed before we kind of delve into, I guess, the beginning of the film.
I mean, I'm looking at Doug Jung's work, and nothing like really stands out to me.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was cool that he had a little cameo.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that. Yeah. But now that you mention it, that
makes sense. It wasn't supposed to be him. It was supposed to be some other guy. But I think he dropped out of the project, so they were like, go
live your dreams.
Live your dreams.
That's one of my dreams.
What?
Having
marrying Sue.
Yeah.
Isn't that everyone's dream?
You can do worse.
But yeah. Oh, to skip way back to what we were talking about how instead of having like weird lens flares, we have like these weird tilted angles. I just also kind of another passing thought I just had was. One thing I kind of liked in this film was because we weren't getting overly lens flared, there were some scenes that were very darkly lit. And I actually kind of liked, well, there was a lot of scenes that were very darkly lit, but I kind of liked it because it kind of brought me back to the original series. Because I know we haven't done our TOS episode. We may never do our TOS episode, but
maybe.
A month ago, basically a month and a half ago, me and Melissa were watching some old Star Trek episodes.
It was my first time watching, actually, so it's very interesting.
Yeah, it was Melissa's first time watching it, and I was kind of trying to watch it with a more critical lens since I had watched it for fun like a couple of years ago. And you know, one thing I noticed when I was watching it more critically was in the original series, everything is lit very like stagey, like very theatrically.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, you know, the darks are very, like the shadows, and the shadows are very dark, and the lighting is very, I don't know, harsh, but, like, there was a lot more contrast. It wasn't, like, very natural lighting. It felt more, like, theatrical.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
I don't know anything about this.
It's probably because of, like, the way it was set up, you know? It's, like, it's they're doing it, you know, on sound stages and, you know, sets and stuff, so I think that's part of it. It also might have been just like the style of like the late
60s. Yeah, I feel like that's a very sci-fi kind of old style look.
Like, yeah, but it was kind of, I don't know, it was kind of cool. Like, and it kind of brought me, watching this new one, it kind of brought me back to that just because when it was very, I wouldn't say it's like as theatrical or like, I guess, fake or saturated color wise as the old Star Trek, but like it just kind of brought me back to that, which was just like a kind of a nice touch for me. Personally, I kind of liked how it wasn't super bright lens flares everywhere, you know?
No, I thought like, it was kind of nice. It was good. I'm just thinking now back to, I don't watch like a lot of old TV shows, but I have seen every single episode of The Twilight Zone. Fun fact about me.
That was black and white.
It was black and white, but like it has, numerous episodes which are like they take place like in space or like on a spaceship or whatever. And they they are very like harshly lit. Even in black and white, you can kind of tell, you know? Like,
yeah, no, because I'm trying to think back to Twilight Zone. I don't know if I've ever seen any of the space episodes, but the ones that I have seen, which were like the more normal on Earth ones, it did seem like the lighting was pretty regular, like natural. But I can imagine it must have been more of a trope or like a convention back in the day to have sci-fi be very like high contrast kind of lighting scheme or something.
Yeah, because I never really thought about it, but now that you mention it.
Yeah, because I know like the whole 2009 thing with the lens flares was the future is so bright and optimistic. Let's blind everyone. But like,
calm down.
It's like, calm down, guys. Calm down. Like, 2009 was like super bright. Into Darkness was like super dark and gritty. And then like Beyond found a nice little balance between the two where it wasn't like super bright, but it also wasn't like super dark and like depressing and terrorism and rah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of
nice. As opposed to the Harry Potter films, which progressively got darker. Every single film. And then every single film, they would do interviews like, this film is so much darker than the others. And I'm like, you can't get any darker. We're practically in pitch black now. Come on.
That is true. I do remember being very taken aback at, like, I think it was the beginning of the fifth film when it's like, when Harry and Dursley are like outside and it's like the Dementors are coming, darkness everywhere, and I was like, okay. but anyway, just something I noticed about like the lighting and just like kind of the way it was shot. There were some scenes that were just so pretty. Like, I really liked when Kirk is kind of, at first he was drinking by himself in that little lounge area, and the stars were just kind of streaming past, and I was like, oh, it's so pretty, oh my god. And there's just some great shots. Like, I really liked when the ship is they're about to warp off, but we see that kind of just that stationary shot of the, I guess it's like the what's it called, it's not a phaser cannon, it's like something else, but dang it, my Trekkie knowledge has failed me. But, you know, whatever. Oh, the photon thingy. The photon blaster, photon thing in the beginning.
This is one thing.
Do you know what the photon blaster is? Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay, so the Enterprise.
Star Wars.
It's a
Star Trek you, Star Wars me. I don't know.
It took me a while to figure out, you know, how the Enterprise is set up. But basically, there's a disc, there's a little neck part, and then there's the two nacelles in the back, you know, kind of propel it forward. And then kind of where the neck, you know how it has like, if you consider like the disc to be kind of the head, and then there's a little neck, and then like the body, and then the nacelles are attached at the back. In the front of the ship, kind of away from the nacelles, there's like I guess would be the little body of it. There's a little blaster, like a photon blaster that you can be used as a weapon. So I think there's a stationary shot where we're just focused on the photon blaster, but we're seeing the stars kind of warp around it and take off, and it's just, like, a super cool shot, which I really, really liked. And then they had the whole, what's that like, that's like a new convention now. It's like the, I don't know if it's, I call it the GoPro shot, but I don't know if it's actually a GoPro shot. But, you know, where someone's, like, moving, like, when Scotty exits the pod on the planet, right?
Yeah.
He it's like the camera moves with his head.
Yeah, it's like,
but
point of view.
I don't know what that's called.
I said point of view, that's not what it's called, but
yeah, in my head I call it the GoPro shot, but I don't know how it's done, and I'm a failure of a film person, but that's why I left anyway. So anyway, I thought that was kind of nice. That's more of, I feel like that's more of like a 2010s kind of
that's a convention. Modern kind of thing to do.
Yeah, it's interesting though. It was interesting to see it in this film. But yeah, I don't know, just like it was, I was pretty happy with this film. I liked the way it looked, like lighting wise it was pretty cool. When we're in Kral's ship, you know how like all those wires are just dangling and it's like super dark?
Yeah, it's like a super fire like, hazard.
It's just like, yeah, and I was like, you know, like I don't know what it is about
dangling,
I guess this
wires.
Is another convention, right? Like evil space villains need to have the dimmest of lighting with exposed wires dangling everywhere, because it had the same
fire
they had the same
hazard.
Thing going on. Fire hazard. They don't care. They had the same thing going on in the 2009 film with Eric Bana's.
Yeah, I remember that. And
it was the same thing. It was like the most dimly lit ship ever.
Like, do you,
you
really
conserve
think
power.
That villains can't like walk into stuff and bang their shins? Like, is that like not something that happens?
They just lurk in the darkness, man. It's just that's just how it is.
Fire
like,
doesn't
know.
Discriminate.
Fire does not discriminate, guys.
It hurts villains and heroes alike.
Yeah.
Also walking into things.
But yeah, I just remember kind of in my head when I saw the dark ship, I was just kind of like snorting in my head because I was like, really? This again? Yeah, basically, I was like, really? It's just like we're on Nero's ship again from 2009. Anyway, so yeah, I thought the lighting and the cinematography was pretty good. We got some excellent shots. I mean, I remember I just watched some behind the scenes footage yesterday, and it was like kind
of
showing how certain things were filmed. Like, you know how like they're tumbling all over the ship, and when it's going down and being attacked, and like they kind of, you know, they had to build little things that would rotate or you know, move around, and they had the camera swinging around. It was all pretty. It was also pretty cool. I mean, this movie has a pretty big budget. I can't remember how much it is. I'm going to see if I can try to find the information for you. But the budget was pretty large.
Wasn't it
I think it might have been larger
than the last film, though.
Was it smaller than Into Darkness? Maybe. But it was still relatively large. I mean, this is a summer blockbuster.
No, yeah, I mean,
all,
it's relatively large.
Regardless. Yeah, I don't know if I can find that information right now, but I was like, this is pretty impressive. I know I've heard some rumors about, like, people trying to fight for wage increases and stuff. Like, some of the actors trying to get wage increases. And then, you know, like, I guess Into Darkness did pretty good with the international audience money-wise. And I don't know about Star Trek Beyond. I mean, I feel like it's too early to tell.
Yeah, it's still pretty early. Wait.
But
on November 2013, it was reported that Attack the Block director Joe Cornish was Paramount's choice to direct the film. But he turned it
what
down.
What could have been? What could have been? But I don't know. I think Justin Lin
did
a
great
job with this, you know?
Yeah, but it would have been interesting.
I mean, I feel like it's really, when it comes to, you know, films being produced and made, I honestly feel like it's like the writing team is the most important core of it, honestly.
I mean, I agree, but that's also because I'm biased.
I am slightly less biased, but I still think, you know, like, we had an excellent story, and that just made everything a lot better this time around.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on with Into Darkness. I honestly don't. I mean, if we could keep the same writers for the next film, that would be great, but
we're
I don't know how realistic that is, you know? But they did a really good job on Beyond.
They did. And they deserve so much credit.
They really do. They really do. But yeah, what was I thinking? I had some train of thought going on with Beyond, but I don't know what it was. I'm sure I'll get back to it eventually. But yeah, I guess let's start talking about, like, the very beginning, I guess.
Okay.
So
can we just talk about, like,
yeah,
my heart? Because every time Chekhov was on the scene, my heart died a little bit.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, it was just so sad with Anton passed away recently, and then, like, last year, like, Leonard Nimoy passed away, and
yeah,
then, like, every time you saw him, it was just like, Oh my god, the feels. Oh my god, the feels were so real in this movie. Yeah. And it's just like, the thing with Anton, it was just so tragic. I mean, I don't know if you guys know about it, but basically it was like he kind of died in a freak accident because he was basically, I think at the end of his driveway, his car was on neutral or something, and there was some kind of defect with it, and it just rolled down and pinned him, which is a horrible way to die. Like, it's not, it's very painful, and it's not like you don't pass quickly. And it was just horrible because he's an only child, and he died on, like, Father's Day. I mean, it's like, it's so, so awful. I mean, he's only 27. It was just, like, so, so sad and tragic. I mean, I thought, like, the nods to him and Leonard Nimoy were, like, well done in this film. But it was just so sad. Like, yeah, I definitely felt like anytime you saw him on screen, I feel like a lot of people were just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it was...
And, yeah, this isn't his last film appearance either. He's in some other films that are going to be released later, but...
But it was just so sad. I wouldn't call it distracting, but... I mean, that's... It kept taking me out of the film because I just kept going...
Yeah. I feel like people weren't like this with, like, Heath Ledger because, like, the Joker was just, like, a whole nother persona. But, like, Chekhov feels like a real person, so it's just, like... It's just so sad. And yeah, definitely, I think most people who knew about this accident, they were kind of bracing themselves when they first saw him on screen for the first time, because we all kind of knew,
yeah,
like, this is going to kind of hurt a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, also, it was just so sad. This is the only film that I've ever seen him in, you know?
Yeah, he's been in other stuff.
I mean, I'm sure he has, but, like, this is the only way that I've ever known him, well, as opposed to, like, Heath Ledger, who I've seen in tons of other projects. So, like, it's very... Mm-hmm. He's very tied to this role in my mind.
Yeah. I remember I watched Fright Night a couple years after the first Star Trek of this century was released. He did a pretty good job in that. I mean, I remember I watched it mainly because he was in it, David Tennant was in it, and that was, like, maybe the one time a internet ad influenced me to see a movie. Like, that was maybe the one time that ever worked, because I was like, David Tennant and Anton Yelchin, I gotta see this. Yeah, it's just so sad. I remember me and my friend in high school, we used to joke around that once I became a famous Hollywood director, I'd get to get her to meet Anton, and it's just like, it's just so tragic, yeah. Man.
I mean, just but, yeah, the circumstances. Yeah,
and then every time you saw...
Just everything about it is just so
sad. It's just the whole situation, just so sad. And I remember, you know, hearing that, like, the cast members, when they were going on their little press junket, you could tell they were, like, really affected.
It's really sad. But,
I mean, because he you know, he didn't die that long ago. It's only been, like, you know, like a month or something. It's only been a few months. It's just, like, it's just really sad. But, yeah, I thought putting the four Anton title card at the end was really nice. And, you know, like... It was just, like, there was, like, kind of, I feel like there was, like, two, like, kind of subtle moments. Or, well, the second one wasn't that subtle. But, like, the first subtle thing was, like, when Kirk and Bond are drinking in that little lounge. And, like, they're toasting to Kirk's, dead father. But they're doing it with, like, Chekhov's liquor. And I was just, like, oh, that was pretty subtle. But it was just, like, No, that was obviously not purposely done, but that was kind of, it kind of was there a little bit. But then the thing that was really more obvious was, like, at the very end, when they're having Kirk's birthday party, when it says, like, toasting to absent friends, which in the movie is to the people they just lost in the past mission, but the camera, like, cuts to Anton, and it's just so heartrending. But I don't know how I was not expecting them to make Spock Prime's passing be, like, a major theme in this film.
No, I absolutely didn't really expect anything.
Yeah, but I kind of liked how it was incorporated, and it actually kind of really worked
really well.
Honestly.
It really kind of drove all of his, you know, desires and thoughts for a lot of the film.
Yeah, you mean Spock, yeah. Right?
That was an it was an ambiguous pronoun choice.
And it was just like, I thought, you know, it was done well and tastefully. It definitely kind of hit you. It hit me in the heart, like seeing his picture with the star dates in the very beginning.
Yeah, I watched.
Yo, the picture at the end. Oh my god! And when, you know, when Spock is like in that room by himself, and he opens up the box of Spock Prime's belongings, and you just see the old crew, and it's just like, oh my heart. Yeah. Oh my god.
I watched this film with my mom, who
did she cry?
She didn't cry, but like when like he opened the picture, like she did an audible gasp. And I was like, I mean, I can't really relate to that those feels, but like I can empathize.
I was definitely tearing up both times. I think I even teared up a little bit when I first saw Anton, but I was definitely tearing up with both of those kind of nods to Leonard Nimoy. I wasn't crying at the picture, but there was definitely a lot of tearing going on. And I teared up the second time I watched it too. And I was just like, man, like, I mean, I know I'm not part of that generation that, you know, watched it a lot when I was a kid, but I still definitely feel a connection to to that old crew. And then, like, even my sister, she told me she watched a couple old episodes a while back, although I don't remember this happening, but she said even her, like, it was just hitting her in the field, and she was just like, oh my god.
It was very well done.
Yeah. And it's just, you could, I mean, I already knew from, you know, past interviews and information and stuff that, you know, like, you know, Leonard and Zachary Quinto had like a pretty good relationship, and not like a super deep friendship, but they were definitely friends. And it was just like, I mean sometimes like the acting is just not acting, man. Sometimes it's like there's like real stuff going on. And it was just like, oh god, it was so sad, but it really worked for the story, and it made sense with the narrative and everything, so I'm really glad how they incorporated it.
I really hope though that they don't kill off Chekhov.
You hope they like send him on a ship, give him a happy ending
someplace. Like, I don't
don't kill him. It just makes it final, and it's just like, oh no.
Yeah,
but
anyway,
yeah, it's just sad, but anyway, Star Trek Beyond, already a lot of deep stuff without even going into the plot. We already talked about, like, you know, all these memorials to other people. But, okay. Are we ready to actually talk about the beginning of the thing? I guess we kind of were jumping all over the place before anyway.
No, but I think the way we're doing it is fine.
We start off with, I believe it's, like, kind of similar to your classic Star Wars beginning where you see a planet.
Yep.
And, you know, a ship, and then, but I don't know, I kind of liked how we started off with the captain's log. Again, very, very reminiscent of the TV show, starting off the episode with the captain's log, and then just his little, like, everything is starting to feel a little episodic.
That was so good.
It was so pointed, but it was so true. And like, I mean, I guess I can imagine that, like, you know, that's the thing, I feel like it's kind of, you know, like, the thing with the original TV show, right? They're on a 5-year mission, and we only, it being a TV show, we only see, like, the fun and exciting things that happen, or scary, dangerous things that happen. We don't see the humdrum, boring days, which I'm sure, if you're on a 5-year mission,
you have a lot of those.
It's
gonna
be pretty boring sometimes, even though you're traveling through space, and it's kind of like, oh, it's so glamorous, like, it's gonna get kind of boring. And I can kind of see how, like, if Kirk is on his, like, upteenth diplomatic mission, and it's, like, the same old saying, he has to, like, convince and schmooze his way and be diplomatic, and it's just kind
he's
of, like,
super diplomatic.
Exactly. He's super diplomatic.
You'd think he'd improve at some point.
Yeah, I think he's still kind of new at this. It's only been, like, 3 years, right? This is, like, their third year.
Yeah.
Into the 5-year mission.
Yeah, but, like, 3 out of 5 60%. Come on, bro. Get with it.
Yeah. But let's be honest, like, the original TOS cast, they're like, a good, like, 10 years older, I think.
Yeah.
Than... Yeah. Although I think the age Chris Pine is right now is the age that Shatner was when he started
really?
The role, which is really wild and mind-boggling. Right? Anyway, so we have, you know, the whole aliens not understanding and attacking and danger sort of kind of thing going on. He gets beamed back, his short is ripped naturally.
Obviously.
Love the callback to the original series, but it's like, y'all should have seen when original Kirk got his shirt ripped, because it was like the whole thing was off, man. Like, Pine got, like, slightly scratched, and he's like, another shirt ripped again, and I definitely guffawed, and I was probably the only one in the theater who guffawed, but I didn't care. But, you know, and we have the whole, it just feels very routine. I mean, you felt how routine the whole thing was.
No, it was set up really well. Actually, it kind of reminds me of the beginning of Star Wars, where you have Rey in the beginning, where,
like, we talked about that.
She doesn't say anything, but you really get to see how, you know, boring, humdrum her life is. Everything is extremely plain. Like, everything she does, she's done a bajillion times before. And, I mean, it was done in a very different way in this film.
Yes.
But it was still...
The same effect,
yeah. And it was done in a relatively short time.
Yeah. You get the sense, like, this is Kirk's job. He does this all the time. It gets kind of boring and just, eh. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of like how you kind of get that sense, like, you know, it's not like every day on a spaceship can be exciting. Sometimes you're just kind of cruising through space waiting for the next giant green hand to come pick you up and, you know, kill some people on your ship. No, so, no biggie. Yeah, the old TOS episodes were pretty wild. Like, they dealt with some weird stuff, man. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? With a TV show, you're going to skip all the boring stuff and, like, just watch the action. And that's kind of how the movies are, too.
Yeah, even more, I would say.
Yeah, even more. We skip, like, the two boring years of... I'm sure there was some exciting stuff that happened, but, you know, we got to the main event, which was the events with Beyond and Crawl and whatever. So, yeah, he's kind of feeling a little burned out from being a captain. We get that great shot. I mean, it's a shot that's been done before, but, like... The shot of him just opening his closet and every shirt is the same. It's like your classic, very meta cartoon shot when the cartoon characters opens the closet and, like, all the shirts are the same. I was just saying, I wish they had the green shirt. I think, but I don't think anyone knows about that unless they've watched the original series, like, a lot. Because in the original series, Kirk had this weird, like, green wrap shirt that he would wear very occasionally. I like to think that he used to spice it up by wearing the green shirt. There was no green shirt in that closet. And I was like, he needs to get a green shirt to spice it up. He needs a green wrap shirt.
Maybe he didn't even have to do all the adventures in this movie. I mean, all he really needed was a green wrap shirt.
All he really needed was a green wrap shirt.
That's really what was throwing him off.
I think I should have a picture of the green wrap shirt to show you, Melissa. Not that any of you guys can see it. But I want to show Melissa. I know that picture. It's the picture from the Trouble with Tribbles episode. I put it in the corner of my room. Let me get it for like 2 seconds. Oh, I should have just grabbed it earlier. Let's see. Here it is. The green wrap shirt. All right. Let me bring the picture over and I will... I know this picture is online, so I'll post it in the show notes. This is a picture.
Oh, yeah. I got you.
Yeah. It's the green wrap shirt. It's, like, his coolest uniform. But he will never get a green wrap shirt in this alternate timeline.
Don't speak so soon. You never know. Maybe it's coming.
Anyway.
You should petition the film.
Yeah, because that's obviously the most important aspect of the film. Get the green wrap shirt in there.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, we get this feeling of, like, you know, he's kind of burned out, discontent. He's not really, it's like, you know, if space is infinite.
My patience,
like,
isn't.
What? Yeah, well, yeah, but also kind of like, well, what are we doing? Because, like, And I get that. It's like they reference it a lot in this film as a theme. Like, it's easy to get lost and, like, not know what you're doing as captain of a ship. So we kind of start off on that kind of glum note. Obviously, we know by the end of it, he will be back on board as captain because he will realize space is awesome and fun and stuff. So,
yeah.
You
know, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, we start off with that, and
like
then
this, it really felt. Maybe it's slightly ironic, but the film felt very episodic, the way that it was set up, with its plots. Like you got the very strong sense of the A plot, the B plot, and the C plot, kind of in terms of you've got a character problem that we start off with. We got adventure, and then by the end, the adventure will have tied into the character's problem, so by the end, the character problem has been resolved.
Yeah.
But
how's that different from, like, any other sci-fi kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I feel like a lot, well, of TV shows, and yeah, it definitely is, but in terms of movies, I feel like because Star Trek has had so many movies, you know, they don't need to spend as much time on, like, the development throughout, because they're already established characters, and you don't need, I mean, like, yes, all the characters ended the film, not all of them, but, you know, some of them ended the film in a different place, but it wasn't really, like, an arc, it was more like a start off here, things happen, which changes their opinion. You know what I mean?
I think it
reminds me, like, of a lot of TV shows which kind of do similar things, which, like, you've got, you know, like, the plot, which ties in with where the character needs to be going. And, yeah, a lot of, like, I feel like other, like, science fiction films, actually, I can't really think of any others that kind of really do it in the same way. I mean, like, if you think of Star Wars, like, it's very plot-driven. This one, it's, like, the character direction and the plot kind of intertwine.
Yeah, I think
their
part
purpose
of it is, you know, they're always trying to be able to pick up a new audience with these newer films. So they always kind of want to start with, I mean, it's not as much as an intro as, like, say, 2009.
Yeah.
But they're always trying to do at least a little bit of an introduction, so you kind of have a sense of what's going on. That way, you don't have to have seen Into Darkness or 2009. You can just start with Beyond. And then same with Into Darkness. You don't have to start with 2009. You can just start with Into Darkness. So I think that might be an issue. And then also just the fact that, like, Star Trek is one of the, I think, few franchises that really made the leap from TV to film. And kind of does, it kind of exists in both. And kind of works. I think it's more TV oriented, but, you know, like, I think that's part of it too. You know, that's why it's more episodic. But yeah, I don't know. It's definitely different than, say, Star Wars.
Yeah, like
Star Wars feels like a more cohesive full story. But again, it's also that, you know, that whole ensemble cast thing going on too.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It's not really like I'm complaining or anything. It's just kind of a note, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different than, I think, a lot of the films that I usually see.
Yeah. So, we have this kind of intro where we figure out Kirk's not really happy with what's going on. He's kind of thinking, you know, what's my purpose? What's going on here? It's like, you know, the classic midlife or quarter life crisis when you're just kind of like, I don't know what's going on anymore. And, you know, Bones is trying to kind of help him out. I you know what, let me just say this right now. I really loved Bones in this movie. He really shone. Like, he hasn't had a chance to really, I mean, I know Into Darkness he basically did, he did stuff, but he was basically, he didn't have anything in that movie. Like, nothing really happened. He had more, and he was more of a caricature in the 2009 film. Like, I feel like we really get more of Bones as a person and more of a character in this film than the other two films.
I agree.
It was just really nice to see that. And it's funny because I know a lot of people are saying, like, Carl Urban's Bones is more McCoy than, like, the original McCoy. like, insert the real McCoy pun here. But, like, he is just more... He's more Bones than the original Bones. But, like, I guess he's still kind of a caricature. But, like, I just felt like he had more stuff to do. Oh, yeah. And he was a more important character in this film, which was just nice to see, finally.
Yeah, I think, going into the film, I occasionally, would confuse him with Scotty. Don't tell him.
Dang. That should not happen. That would never happen in the original series or the original movies.
But now we're all good now. We're close. We're tight.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's like, the original ones, right? It started off with, it was mainly, you know, Kirk is the protagonist, but then you have Spock as kind of like a, is it deuteragonist or whatever you, however you pronounce it?
Sure.
But then, once we got to, like, season, I think, like, 2 and 3 of the original series, like, Leonard McCoy became more of a main character. And so you kind of have this, like, trifecta. And you don't really get that trifecta. I mean, you don't really even get that too much in Beyond. But
it doesn't have it was just to nice be to, that way.
It doesn't have to be a trifecta. But it was just... When you have that, it feels much more Star Trek. And it was just kind of nice to have... Especially since they decided to pair off Bones and Spock. It was just kind of nice. Because a lot of the original stuff, if it wasn't doing a trifecta, it was at least doing, like, Spock with Bones, or Spock with Kirk, or Kirk with Bones. Like, and we've gotten a lot of Kirk with Bones, like, with the first movie and stuff. Yeah. But it was just kind of nice to get more Spock and Bones interaction in this film. Because that's kind of... Yeah, and they're supposed to play off each other well, because they're such different personalities, you know? Yeah. And it was nice. We have the whole thing with them. They're drinking because Jim's about to get 1 year older, because that's how it works normally. That
is generally how birthdays work, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I liked how it still weighs heavily on him, the whole, his father dying in the first movie. It's like, that's been a big shadow over his entire life. I mean, when your dad's death day is your birthday, that's kind of some heavy stuff single year.
Yeah. I thought, like, that moment was really touching. The whole scene worked really well. But, I really appreciated that they don't just, like, forget about that, because a lot of times it seems that they do forget about things like that, about, like, you know, things that would be monumental moments in other people's lives just kind of get brushed aside because it's, like, not fun to talk about
in, like, a general sci-fi sense. Yeah, so it was nice that, like, hey, Kirk's a human and this thing is still a problem for him. You know, he talks about how, like, it's kind of, like, a reason why he doesn't really want to celebrate his birthday. I mean, because it's just so heavily tied into this kind of sorrow and grief. And it was just, it was a good moment. I really liked it. I like how it was, once they started referencing that kind of stuff, like, you know, George Kirk's passing, I was like, you know, there's probably going to be a lot more 2009 callbacks. Mm. And, yeah, that's, like, where it first started, but then it just got... more and more, like, throwbacks started coming later on. So it was kind of, and that's how I kind of knew it was going to be a good film, because I was like, oh, we're totally going to forget about Into Darkness, aren't we?
Well, yes.
We're totally just going to go skip right back to 2009, which worked for me. So we get that kind of, so I get the sense, okay, this whole thing, like, him becoming his own man or whatever, is kind of going to be, like, the crux of the story, or the small crux of it anyway. And then we get to, they're docking at Yorktown. They're getting off to go on shore leave or do whatever. Wasn't much of a shore leave. No one really seemed to be vacationing or having too much
fun
because they basically had to go right back to work after, like, not even a day.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a day. Yeah. We have
If I was doing that, like, there'd be a lawsuit. There'd be, like, a...
Hey, man, I had this stipulated vacation time in my contract, so, like, can I just go on shore leave?
I don't care who freaking arrives. Darth Vader could be pulling up, and I would still be demanding my shore leave.
It's still my shore leave, dang it. We do get a quick shot of Sulu meeting his husband and adorable daughter, who we saw a picture of earlier.
Very cute.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just, you know, even though it wasn't as introduced the cast ensemble as, like, you know, the first film, it was kind of like, it feels like we're really getting to know the characters more, and they're feeling more like humans, not just
caricatures.
People who are heroes and do things and whatever, yeah, and shout random stuff. Like, so yeah, we get, you know, Sulu's looking at his picture of his daughter. We see her later, and apparently there was supposed to be a kiss scene, which would make sense.
Yeah, I heard that.
But then it got cut because, you know, foreign audiences and money and blah or whatever and controversy. Yeah. So
it is,
which is unfortunate. And I know people were saying, like, you know, basically it's like kind of like if you think about like any heterosexual couple, you'd at least get like a peck or something. Yeah. I don't, you don't get any of that with Sulu.
I mean, that's another discussion for another time. But like the way that, you know, movies make their money now, the movies yeah, that are coming out are significantly changing the way that,
yes,
it's, I mean, it's very interesting.
We talked about this.
We
recorded a Godzilla episode where we did talk about this subject, so it's gonna come up in a later episode, but trust that we discussed the topic of how movies becoming more international has kind of changed the game.
So look forward to that.
A lot will be coming up in like another couple of episodes in our little schedule, but anyway.
I don't even remember, but I'm sure we did.
I remember this because I don't know. I just do. But yeah, like when you have an international audience, you kind of have to cater to them if you want to make money. And that's kind of like, that's the thing about Hollywood. I mean, there's art and filmmaking, and then there's making money, and that's going to dictate a lot of it. Yeah. So
I like when they coincide, but they often...
But oftentimes they do not.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they do not. Yeah. So, yeah. We have the... So they're on shore leave, but that's quickly interrupted because it's time for an adventure. So we get...
Before that, we do find out...
Okay, before that.
Our big OTP couple has broken up. Or...
No! I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to believe that they had broken up. I thought they were just going through a rough patch. But then, like, it's basically confirmed after Bones talks to Spock. And I was just like, oh, man. I still want to believe they're going through a rough patch. But anyway. So, yeah, like, Uhura's like, hey, you should take this necklace back. And Spock's like,
nah, bruh.
That's offensive. That's problematic. So then she keeps the necklace, at least for a little bit. Bones and Spock have a little bit of interaction. And that's just... And then, you know, the thing with when the Vulcans started approaching Spock, I thought there was going to be, like, a whole big thing. Same. I didn't anticipate that it was going to be notification that Spock Prime had passed away. But, man, that scene when... It's, like, after he sees, I think, the picture... Mm. And the dates,
yeah,
on the picture, the camera just kind of cuts to this shot of Spock just standing, yeah, by himself on this empty, I don't know, concrete space with some pillars and with the city below him. And it was just, that was so good. It was just like the emptiness of it. It was just, I was like, that's how I feel in my heart. but it was just visually, it was fantastic. How they did that. I mean, it's just like simple stuff like that. It just works.
Yeah, it's that stuff that really makes something. It makes it work. It makes you feel for them.
Yeah. I don't think we don't get really anything else from the other crew members. I know, like, earlier on when Kirk was doing his little captain's log. Voiceover, we just kind of see everyone on the ship. We kind of just, like, see, you know, just random people on the ship, you know, people hooking up or getting kicked out.
That was amusing. Or... I don't know why I found that so funny, but it was.
Yeah, I think that was actually the first. That's actually the first time we saw Anton, is when he gets kicked out of that Green Girl's room, and she's like yelling at him, and he doesn't have a shirt on, and people are just kind of staring at him. It's very quick, but yeah. And then we have, like,
it's like living in a dorm. Basically how it is. Where, like, everyone kind of knows everyone else's business, just, like, a little bit.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it is. I mean, you definitely get more of a sense of that, I guess, with the TV show. But, yeah, that's essentially how they were living. They're in a spaceship for years. I mean, yes, every once in a while, they make pit stops to get more food and fuel and relax and shore leave and stuff, but it's essentially like living on a big gigantic
island,
like dorm. And except, you know, you're basically military. Well, not basically military, you're kind of military,
pseudo military.
You're pseudo military. You're more, I know they went with more of like a navy kind of a feel in the original movies, not the original show, but you know, they're like pseudo military. They're more like a peacekeeping force, honestly, that has to use force every once in a while.
Peacekeeping force.
That felt very Abed to me for some reason. But anyway, so, yeah, I kind of like how we get that feel, like, this is kind of more, the crew is more of a family now, or more of, like, a group, you know? They're not just, like, nameless strangers who were assigned to a ship. They kind of know each other. And then, yeah. You know, we get...
It makes it personal.
It does make it personal.
Especially what happens later.
Yeah. Then we see... We get to, you know, we have Kirk's meeting with the, I guess, Admiral of Yorktown base. And then she's, you know, giving him the little spiel, like, you're not... Like, this is a very common thing with captains. He's like, yeah, denial.
It's not just a river in Egypt.
I knew you were going to say that. I do.
I can't help it. I have tics.
You do.
Just like my dog.
And then we get to the first adventure, which is, oh no, there's a alien spacecraft that's falling into Yorktown. The gasp. And what are we going to do about this?
The gasp.
The moment I saw it, I started getting, again, 2009 flashbacks. I was like, you know, when a ship looks that pointy, it's probably evil. Kind of like the Narada in the 2009 film. Like, when a spaceship looks that foreboding and creepy, and it was very, it did not look like a peaceful, friendly ship. I was like, I think this is a trap. This is probably a trap. And then, because I mean, to quote one of my old coworkers, humans don't like sharp angles and squares and pointy triangles. They like round, like non-threatening shapes. And that ship was made up of many threatening shapes. So I was like, this filmmakers know what they're doing. If the visual is supposed to be kind of threatening and creepy, it means something is horribly, horribly wrong. So we meet an alien, possibly a captain. I'm seeing on my wiki that her name is Kalara, who says, you know, the one with all the face ridges. I mean, I guess all the aliens here have face ridges, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
She's the one who is, we find out later, is working for Krall. Do you not know what I'm talking about?
There's an ad open someplace.
Oh, and it's like being really loud and blary.
It was from the wiki.
You need an ad blocker, man.
Oh, no, okay. You want to know the whole story about this? I'm going to give it to you, even if you don't care.
Oh, God, why?
Okay, so when I podcast, I want to try and minimize the sounds that my computer makes. And so when I almost always have a lot of tabs open. Because not Maggie level tabs, which is like 5,000, but you know, I have, you know, probably 10 and I have to close those if I want my computer to shut up. So what I do is I close it. And then, so the next time I open up Chrome, I will just do like the recently closed, so all of my things come back. Perfect. Except in this particular time, I wanted to be on the internet. But if I was on the internet, then we're going to be having some problems in terms of getting back to the tabs that I wanted. So I went on Microsoft Edge, which I never use Microsoft Edge. This is probably my first time using it. And so I was like, I'm going to try it. And
Lord.
Yeah, that was the story. And then there was an ad, so I closed it. And so now we're running blind.
Tell it again, bruh.
Do you want me to? I totally will.
No. No, please don't. Please don't ever tell it again.
Okay. So there's this problem with my computer.
No! You're going to stop. Anyway, so the Yorktown, I guess, security forces or border patrol or whatever you want to call them.
Greg Grunberg.
With Greg Grunberg, they capture the ship. They find out there's someone inside who claims that her ship is stranded in this nebula and she needs to get them back. So, hey, it's time to send our, like, most technologically tricked out ship to the nebula. And I was
like,
really, guys? Yeah, I had that same thought. I was like, isn't that kind of a bad idea in case it's a trap? Does no one else think this is a trap?
Nobody else thought it was a trap.
And I was just like, really, guys? You're really gonna... But I guess, you know, they have... They put in, I guess, a lot of good faith into other people's...
why? And statements. That is why you failed. That's why they deserved everything bad.
Okay, you can stop now. See, but anyway...
That is the problem.
I mean... I feel like Kirk was kind of wary, but we don't ever figure out, you know, like Chekhov says, we don't really ever figure out when exactly he figured out that she was lying. But I definitely felt like he wasn't 100% like
sold
on this issue. But he was like, you know, let's just check it out anyway. So they equip the alien captain, Kalara, they equip her with a universal translator, which she wears on her collar. So they can understand what she's saying
Andy.
In a nice British voice. And, you know, the Enterprise, shore leave is over, guys. You gotta get back to work.
Sorry.
So, sorry, guys. So they
demand
warp
overtime
into the nebula.
Right? Do they have a union?
I don't think so. I don't think you can be in a union if you're working for a pseudo-military agency.
They need a union.
But yeah, they warp into the nebula. It's kind of, again, similar to 2009 when they're kind of trying to avoid all this debris that's around them. Except, oh no, there's something different this time. There are these weird drone attacking machines or bees or whatever you want to call them that can basically slice through the Enterprise.
Slice and dice.
That's great. So, you know.
Yep.
Thanks, Melissa. Really, really good job with the commentary today.
I told you I was tired.
That's true. That's always your excuse.
I'm always
anyway,
tired.
That's always my excuse, too. But yeah, they... So, these weird drone ship things, they're kind of scary looking. They puncture and breach the hull of the ship. The security team gets sent down. And everyone knows, a red shirt's a dead shirt. So... The security team gets sent down. They're all pointing, like they're all like one to each ship with a phaser in their hand. Aliens start popping out. They're trying to shoot them, but
like
guess what? One of them has this crazy electric ray gun that kills like all of them in a nice little line, which is also a fantastic visual shot, but also very sad. But Yeah, that was the thing that happened. So a bunch of them get killed, just like straight down a catwalk, because they all get electrocuted or something.
Yeah, I hate when happens.
Then we see Krall, aka Idris Elba.
But the question becomes, why wasn't he crawling?
Stop.
I literally cannot.
Also, I don't even know how he got the name Krall. Like, how do you go from... Wasn't his name, like...
It was something really long.
Balthazar Edison?
Yeah.
Or Edison Balthazar? And then how do you go from that to Krall? But anyway...
I mean, if I had a name
that I guess
long,
it's been hundreds
of
years.
I would
too. I guess Balthazar is kind of long.
What's anyway. The easiest nickname for that? Balthy.
Oh man. So Krall shows up with I don't know if any of his like not the drone, but any of his like goons are with him. But yeah, he shows posse, up,
doesn't he? Hmm? He has a little posse with him, doesn't he?
I think he has one or two people with him that are not drones.
Yeah.
One is Manus, but then I can't remember if there's another one.
I'm not sure.
But anyway, can't remember if Manus is with him on the ship when he first arrives. But we see Krall, and it's very obvious that he is the leader of this big, bad invasion attack thing.
And it's also very obvious that he is the big bad.
Yeah.
Like, if you didn't figure it out already, you figured it out, bro.
Yeah. I love how, you know, Spock and Bones are sent to go find out what's going on. And Spock's just kind of like, yep, I identified who the leader is. And it's just like, yep, that didn't take you very long at all. It definitely started going more of like a horror route once we got like Bones scanning that guy's internal organs and we just see them kind of just like collapsing in on themselves and his face just like turning into something zombified and horrible.
It was kind of disturbing.
Yeah, it got very, very creepy. I mean, Krall, I don't know about Krall, because here's the thing, right? Like, I don't know if he has the power to, I guess, suck the energy or life force out of people with just his bare hands, or if he needs some kind of special technology to do it. I was trying to look for evidence of that the second time I watched, but I couldn't figure it out. I really wasn't sure. But it was very Siler-esque, you know?
That's very nice, yeah.
Why are you laughing?
You know, I have these tics, right? Like, somebody says something, and I always say something back, right? And it actually, one of them came up, during the movie itself. And
oh God.
It's bare hands. Or maybe it was the trailer before, but.
What are you talking about?
If someone's, you just said it. You said bare, you know, if you don't know if, Krall can do it with his bare hands. And I'm like, he doesn't have bare hands. He has human hands.
You and your strange verbal take. I mean, I think to some extent we all have stuff like that, but
I mean, they're not. I can control myself. They're not like super takes. They're just. I always think of certain puns when certain words come up.
The denial one is like it happens every time. Like every time.
I can.
It never doesn't happen. But anyway.
Well, then I've done my
job. So, you know, Spock gets into the elevator with Bones with like a puny little phaser.
Yeah, like who are you? Like, what do you think you're going to do with that?
Right. They start having a mini shootout on that deck. Krall is clearly after the weird little artifact that was
because
brought
of
up
course
in the beginning. I mean, again, I think the story, the writing was pretty tight. Yeah. Stuff that's kind of mentioned in passing is we come back to that later. Like Keenser, who showed up in the 2009 film, but didn't show up in Into Darkness. Keenser is apparently sneezing some kind of acidic goo, which later on, they use that goo to break out of the prison. I thought, the writing was pretty tight.
No, it was
There's
good.
Not really anything that's mentioned for no reason.
It's also, like I said before, it is kind of like a TV show where things always come back. I mean, obviously that's true with movies too. But like,
I mean, I feel like a good film will do that.
But too. Like, not as much. There's a lot more extraneous, I think, details in movies generally. TV, yeah. It's, you know, it has to be very tight. So if something is brought up, you know that you're going to come back to it, or at least a good show.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of just wish, I know the movie has a runtime of like 2 hours, which isn't too bad. I kind of wish they had tacked on an extra 30 minutes that just was kind of just crawl centric. But, you know, I guess that would have made it too long. I don't know, man.
I think.
Anyway.
I don't know if I would say 30 minutes, but maybe like
15.
10 to 15, yeah.
Yeah. I think, yeah, like, I think the original 2009 one was maybe 2 hours and 10 minutes or something. But anyway. So, clearly there's a trap, something's going on here. Kirk it's a turns trap. Back and is like, what? Yeah, no, I exactly that. That's exactly what played in my head when this whole situation started happening. Kirk turns around and is like, what the heck did you just lead us into, you crazy alien captain person?
And she's like, oops, nah, sorry, bruh.
Yeah. So, yeah, the nebula is not going well.
That's an understatement.
Again, kind of, the whole thing, it being attacked kind of reminded me again of, like, 2009 when their ship is getting, they're trying to navigate through a debris field, except this time it's not a debris field, it's a debris field plus all the stuff is attacking them at the same time. And it's not like one gigantic ship like the Narada. It is like a bunch of little ships.
It's almost like
that
the
can
opposite.
Do massive damage. It's also the opposite. So, yeah, things are not looking very good. So, Krall kind of ends up just dismantling the whole ship.
No big
and
deal. That was so, it was just, it was a really long sequence of the whole thing that we're talking about. It took a, you know, a long
yeah.
time, but like, it was really worth every moment. You really felt every panel and every, it was painful.
Yeah.
It was
and
like,
you felt like, it was painful. It was seeing this
ship. It was
ship
like a main
be,
character dying.
Yeah. And that was kind of like, they were kind of trying to make it that way. Kind of like you're seeing someone dying in front of you. You're seeing the ship falling apart. And it wasn't a quick blast or nothing. It was like, let's chop off the nacelles.
Yeah.
Let's chop off the neck. Let's detach the saucer. Let's really destroy this thing. I mean, to be fair, in the previous films, Enterprise was also destroyed slightly. But it was never destroyed to, like, this extent.
It was like,
but yeah, it's definitely been a complaint. Yeah, it's definitely been a complaint that, like, why does Enterprise get, like, destroyed every film? But, like, I feel like, I guess, with the previous two, there wasn't really much destroyed, as it was just kind of heavily
damaged.
Yeah, it's
kind of banged up.
This time was, like, actually really destroyed. Like,
this was, like,
really
you,
taken
you want
apart.
It to be destroyed? I'm show you destroyed.
I'm show you destruction right now. So, Enterprise gets dismantled, taken apart in the most painful way possible. It's just so, it's like, yeah, it's kind of meant to evoke some kind of emotional response. to quote my 2009 film, you've invoked an emotional response in me. And so they're taken apart. Krall's like literally saying like, what's the name? Doesn't he like, you know, slice it off at the neck or something like that?
Don't ask me. I don't know.
Anyway, all very, I don't know if visceral is the right term,
no,
but very,
I think so.
You know.
Visceral.
Very, very, very visceral. So, the ship is getting sliced into pieces. Everyone's kind of everywhere. Sulu's at the con. Chekov's also in, like, the command room. Kirk and Uhura have run down to, I guess, separate the dish from the rest of the ship. The little neck part that remains.
Yeah. If I had...
I think Spock and Bones are on a completely different section of the ship. They have to evacuate.
Yeah.
And then Scotty, I guess, he must have been near the nacelles. And then once that gets chopped off, he has to... Everyone basically has to escape and get down to the planet, essentially.
Yeah. If I had any complaint about that, it was kind of, like, confusing where all of the characters were and what they were all trying
yeah.
to be doing. Because they were all trying to kind of save the day in their own special way. But... None of them, you know, succeeded, obviously, but, like, they were all, like, doing different things, and it was kind of confusing, at least for me.
Yeah, it's definitely confusing. I definitely only figured out kind of where everyone was situated the second time I watched it, which isn't great, but, I mean, they never really explain what deck 1, 2, 3 to whatever 30, they never explain what number decks are in which area. So, you know, I mean, you never figure that out in the original series, and you know, I don't think you ever figured that out.
I mean,
in the
I don't
movies.
Need to know, like, exactly anything.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, like, what each person's trying to be doing. Exactly.
Yeah, people are basically kind of split up, and they're all trying, so, let's see. They get attacked, right? They're trying to warp out of there, but they can't because the nacelles in the back have been sliced off by Krall's drone army.
Yeah.
And the nacelles are how they warp out of there. They can't warp out, so they're still trying to, they keep trying to figure out ways to get out up until they figure out, okay, we're getting sucked in by the planet's gravity. We have nowhere to go but down into the planet. Let's try not to crash and die.
Yeah.
Let's try to eject everyone and hope for the best. But the ejections don't work out so well. So the whole thing with the ship going down and everything, again, really reminiscent of the 2009 film. You know, we have a lot of parallels. You know, the whole thing with Kirk was Kirk was born during an attack on his father's ship. And his father had to save, I don't know, hundreds of people by kind of sacrificing himself. Because naturally, autopilot doesn't work because autopilot never freaking works when you need it to work.
It never works. That's just like a rule.
It never works. So clearly he has to manually pilot the thing. He tells everyone else to evacuate. But it's one of the earlier ships, so they're not used to these mass evacuations. So that's the whole thing.
Like the Titanic.
Yeah, basically. And George Kirk dies in an explosion when the ship blows up, but he has saved the rest of his crew. This time around, they have learned from that experience. They have these escape pods kind of built into the ship, so everyone's kind of just evacuating once they get the order to evacuate. Mm-hmm. Kirk, thankfully, does not have to do this same thing his dad does, aka blow himself up while piloting the ship towards something. They have the escape pods in place. So Scotty has, you know, taken a page out of Khan's playbook and has escaped from the warp nacelles, I think. What else is going on? Oh, yeah, Uhura is trapped with Krall, which is great. And let's see, what about the other crew? So Scotty, oh yeah, Kirk and Bones, not Kirk and Bones, God, I always mix up their names, it's so annoying. Spock and Bones, they were running around trying to attack Krall, but now they're stuck on another part of the ship that's falling, so they evacuate. That's why it's confusing, right? Because, like, everyone is in different parts of the ship, falling at different speeds, going in different areas, so, like, it's all a mishmash. Yes. But yeah, they end up evacuating on a pod together or something. And yeah, everyone else I think I surmise is on the main part, like the little dish part. Are you alright?
Yeah.
Or are you just really tired?
I'm just tired. My mind's my mind's with it. My head is like, no.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's see. So the rest of the crew, I think, is on the dish, and Kirk is trying, so they figured out, okay, it's not possible to warp out or get out of here.
We stuck.
Or go on impulse. We have to evacuate and land on the planet. The problem is, all the evacuation pods, they see that they're being snatched up by the drones, but, I mean, there's not really any alternative,
right.
So they evacuate, but we see Sulu, after he evacuates, he gets instantly captured by a drone. Taken to who knows where.
We know where.
We find out later. But Kirk and Chekov, they end up ditching the spaceship kind of closer. I think once they get to the atmosphere or past the atmosphere. So they are not captured by the drones. They end up in a forest. So everyone kind of ends up in different locations. Bones and Spock end up near a river. For some reason, it kind of gave me Hunger Games PETA in the river flashbacks for like a second.
J-Law.
They end up by a river. Kirk, the other what's her name, Kalara, the other captain, and Chekov end up in a forest, and then the rest of the crew, well no, Scotty ends up in like a in another part of the forest, right? And the rest of the crew, they are captured by the drone, so they are at Krall's base of operations.
Yes.
And this is where the fun really begins.
Join us next week when we continue our discussion of Star Trek Beyond.